Chapter 12. Lieutenant Colonel Garrick Courtney removed his uniform jacket and hung it carefully on the dumb valet beside his desk. The way a house-proud wife straightens a picture on her wall, he touched the purple watered silk on which was suspended the heavy bronze cross until it hung to his satisfaction. His lips moving, he read the inscription again. "For valor," and smiled. The champagne he had drunk during lunch made his brain feel like a great brilliant diamond set in his skull, sharp and hard and clear. He sat down, swiveled the chair sideways to the desk, and stretched his legs out in front of him. "Send him in, orderly," he shouted, and dropped his eyes to his boots. You couldn't tell the difference, he decided. No one could tell by looking at them which one was flesh and bone beneath the polished leather, or which leg was carved wood with a cunningly articulated ankle. "Sir?" The voice startled him, and he pulled his legs in guiltily, hiding them beneath his chair. "Curtis!" He looked up at the man who stood before his desk. Tim stood rigidly to attention, staring stolidly over Gary's head, and Gary let him stand. He felt satisfaction that this hulking bastard must use those two powerful legs to pay respect to Garrick Courtney. Let him stand. He waited, watching him, and at last Tim fidgeted slightly and cleared his throat.
"At ease."
There was no doubt now as to who held the power. Gary picked up the paper knife from his desk and turned it in his hands as he spoke. "You're wondering why I sent for you," he smiled expansively. "Well, the reason is that I have a job for you at last. I lunched with General Buller today." He paused to let that absorb. "We discussed the offensive. He wanted my views on certain plans he has in mind," Gary caught himself. "Anyway, that is all beside the point. I want you and your men to reconnoitre the river on both sides of Colenso. See here," Gary spread a map on the desk in front of him. "There are fords marked here and here." He jabbed the map with the paper knife. "Find them and mark them well. Check the bridges, both the railway and the road bridge. Make certain they are intact. Do it tonight. I want your full report in the morning. You can go."
"Yes, sir."
"Oh, Curtis?" Gary stopped him as he stooped in the entrance of the tent. "Don't fail. Find those fords." The canvas flap dropped closed behind the American, and Gary opened the drawer of his desk and took out a silver flask set with carnelians. He unscrewed it and sniffed the contents before he drank. With the dawn, in bedraggled pairs, the guides dribbled into camp. Sean and Saul were the last to return. They dismounted, turned their horses over to the servants, and joined the group around the fire. "Yes?" Tim looked up from where he squatted with a mug of coffee cupped in his hands. His clothing was soaked, and steam lifted off it as it dried in the heat from the flames.
"They've blown the rail bridge, but the road bridge is still intact."
"You're sure?"
"We walked across."
"Well, that's something, anyway," grunted Tim, and Sean raised a sceptical eyebrow.
"You think so? Hasn't it occurred to you that they've left the bridge because that is where they want us to cross?"
No one replied, and Sean went on wearily.
"When we checked the bridges, Saul and I did a bit of exploring on the far side. Just beyond the railway bridge, there is a series of little koppies. We crawled around the bottom of them."
"And?"
"There are more boars sitting on those koppies than there are quills on a porcupine's back. Whoever tries to cross those bridges in daylight is going to get the bejesus shot out of him."
"Lovely thought," growled Tim.
"Charming, isn't it? Further contemplation of it will make me puke. What did you find?"
"Oh, we found plenty of water."
Tim glanced down at his sodden clothing.
"Deep water."
"No ford,"
Sean anticipated gloomily.
"None, but we found a ferry boat on the bank with the bottom knocked out of it. That could be the excuse for marking a ford on the map."
"So now you can go and tell our beloved colonel the glad tidings," Saul grinned. "But one gets you five that it has no effect. My guess is that Buller will attack Colenso within the next 2 days. He might just be able to get a couple of thousand men across that bridge. Then we'd have a chance."
Tim regarded him balefully.
"And the guides will be the first to cross. All very well for you. The rabbi has reduced your target area considerably. But what about us?"
"But it's marked on the map,"
protested Lieutenant Colonel Garrick Courtney.
His head was bowed so that Tim could see the pink scalp through the furrows the comb had left in his sandy brown hair.
"I've seen dragons and sea monsters marked on maps, sir,"
Tim answered. And Gary looked up at him coldly, with pale blue eyes. "You're not paid to be a comedian, Curtis."
"I beg your pardon, sir."
And Gary frowned. Curtis could make the "sir" sound like an insult. "Who did you send?" he demanded.
"I went myself, sir."
"You could have missed it in the dark. If there is a ford there, it would have a road, or at least a path leading down to it. I wouldn't have missed that, sir."
"But in the darkness you could have been mistaken," insisted Gary.
"You might have missed something that would be obvious in daylight."
"Well, sir..."
"Good," briskly Gary went on. "Now the bridges. You say these are still intact."
"Only the road bridge, but..."
"But what?"
"The men I sent report that the hills beyond the river are heavily defended, almost as though the bridge has been preserved to bait a trap."
"Curtis," deliberately Gary laid his paper knife upon the map before him. His nose was too large for the space between his eyes, and when he pursed his lips this way, he looked, Tim thought, like a bird, a sparrow, a little brown sparrow.
"Curtis," Gary repeated softly, "it seems to me you have very little enthusiasm for this business. I send you out to do a job, and you come back with a long list of excuses. I don't think you realize how important this is."
"Chirp, chirp, chirp, little sparrow." Tim smiled secretly, and Gary flushed. "For instance, who did you send to reconnoitre these bridges? Reliable men, I hope."
"They are, sir."
"Who?"
"Friedman."
"Oh, the little Jewish lawyer. A wise choice, Curtis. A commendably wise choice." Gary sniffed and picked up the paper knife.
"My God," Curtis marvelled. "He's a Jew-baiter as well. This little sparrow has all the virtues."
"Who else did you send?"
"A new recruit."
"A new recruit? A new recruit?" Gary dropped the knife and lifted his hands in appeal.
"I happen to have worked for him before the war. I know him well, sir. He's a first-class man. I'd trust him before anyone else you could name. In fact, I was going to ask you to approve his promotion to sergeant."
"And what is the name of this paragon?"
"Funnily enough, it's the same as yours, sir, although he tells me you're not related. His name is Courtney. Sean Courtney."
Slowly, very slowly, the expression of Gary's face altered. It became smooth, neutral, pale also, the lifeless, translucent paleness of a corpse's face. All life died in his eyes as well. They were looking inwards, back into the secret places of long ago, the dark places. They saw a small boy climbing a hill. He was climbing up through thick bush, young legs strong beneath him, climbing in deep shade with the smell of leaf mould and the soft murmur of insects, sweating in the heat of an Natal summer's morning, eyes straining ahead through the dense green foliage for a glimpse of the bushbuck they were hunting, the dog leaning eagerly against the leash and the same eagerness pumping in his own chest. The dog barked once, and immediately the brush and stir of a big body moving ahead of them, the click of a hoof against rock, then the rush of its run. The shot, a blunt burst of sound, and the buck bleating, wounded, as it thrashed through the grass, and Sean's voice high and unbroken, "I got him! I got him! I got him! First shot! Gary, Gary! I got him! I got him!" Into the sunlight, the dog dragging him, Sean wild with excitement, running down the slope towards him with the shotgun, Sean falling, the gun flung from his hands, the roar of the second shot, and the blow that knocked Gary's leg out from under him. Sitting now in the grass and staring at the leg, the little white splinters of bone in the pulped flesh, and the blood pumping dark and strong and thick as custard.
"I didn't mean it, I didn't mean it. Oh, God, Gary, I didn't mean it. I slipped, honest, I slipped."
Gary shuddered. A violent, almost sensual spasm of his whole body, and the leg beneath the desk twitched in sympathy.
"Are you all right, sir?"
There was an edge of concern on Tim's voice.
"I'm perfectly well, thank you, Curtis."
Gary smoothed back the hair from his temples. There were deep bays of baldness there, and his hairline was frayed and irregular.
"Please continue."
"Well, as I was saying, it looks like a trap. They've left those bridges because It is your duty to collect information, Curtis. It is the duty of the general staff to evaluate it.
I think that completes your report.
Good, then you may leave. He must have a drink now. Already his hand was on the handle of the drawer.
Curtis!
His voice croaked with the terrible dryness in his throat. But he spoke out through it. That promotion you spoke of is approved. Make the man a sergeant.
Very well, sir.
Of course, in the event of a frontal assault on the bridges, he will act as guide for the first attack.
Sir?
You see the need for it, don't you?
Tim had never heard this wheedling tone from him before. It was almost as though he wanted Tim's approval. As though he were trying to justify his decision.
I mean, he knows the bridges. He's been over them. He's the one who knows them, isn't he?
Yes, sir.
And after all, he's a sergeant. I mean, we should send someone with rank. We can't just send anybody.
I could go, sir.
No. We'll need you at the ford.
As you wish.
You won't forget, will you? You will send him, won't you?
Almost pleading now.
I'll send him, agreed Tim, and stooped out of the tent.
Gary jerked open the drawer, and his fingernails scrabbled on the rough wood in their haste to find the flask.